Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. If you'd like to join our writing community on Discord and get access to fantasy writing classes and books on Patreon, check the links in the description. And if you don't want to miss any future episodes, be sure to follow or subscribe. And to support the show, leave a quick rating on Spotify or iTunes and share this episode on social media or with anyone who you think may be interested. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy the show. This is a paid advertisement by Fictionary. Fictionary is a tool that offers writers a structured approach to editing. It was created by best-selling author Christina Stanley and was designed using her knowledge and insights. Let's face it, not many writers enjoy editing. It can be laborious, and with so much to analyze and consider, it can be tough to get right to. Fictionary seeks to tackle these problems. After you upload your manuscript and enter the details of your scenes and chapters and the nature of your book, it'll present you with graphics and overviews that analyze your story. It breaks down things like character arcs, story arcs, and it can measure the development of your story compared to what would be expected by other readers in the genre. Fictionary also offers the opportunity to get key developmental help with your stories. And this can help you adjust and tweak the structure so that it flows like a river. It takes you through a very simple process that guides you through the process of building your story up layer by layer. It can help beginner writers, and it can also help experienced writers too, which makes it a very unique and useful tool. I've used the tool myself, and I found the visual overviews and the analysis very helpful indeed. The more time you spend using the tool, the more familiar you become with its analytical functions, and that will see you get the very, very best results. So if you're looking for more advanced support with your editing, but you don't quite have the budget for an editor, try Fictionary. It's free for 14 days, and you don't have to enter any credit card information to get that trial. And also, as a very special offer to listeners of the Fantasy Writers Toolshed, you can get 25% off the first 6 months of your monthly subscription or 6 months off the first year of your annual subscription. The code is FWT25, and you can head to fictionary.co/FWT to find out more. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. I'm your host, Richie Billing, and today I am delighted to be joined by the brilliant cartographers Zachary and Eric, also known as Tindle Doodle and Dread Maps on Discord and Patreon. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining me. I've been excited to chat with people just like yourselves. All about maps just for a really long time, to be honest, because as you both know, they play such a huge role, not just in the fantasy and sci-fi genres, but with things like D&D campaigns and gaming as well. But being writers, we don't always know an awful lot about maps, nor can we like design and draw them very well. That's what we wanted to cover here today, as well as discussing like map making platforms that you guys both use in Karnas, which is an amazing thing. I've used it myself. It's fantastic. So I think the best place to start is with you guys. How did you both get into making maps, and what's your story? Tell us all about you.
You can go first.
All right. Thank you. Yeah. So pre-COVID, I played a lot in person, and I was into like painting and miniatures for a little bit. And then COVID happened and all that kind of world evaporated, right? And I have all this creative energy all the time. So I had used Incarnate in the past. It was a very simple thing to use way long time ago. It only did regional maps, I think, at the time. And when I revisited it, I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna see what this is about again. They had a battle map feature, right? So I got really into that. And after I got to a certain skill level, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna try to see if other people would like to use my maps as well. And but initially it was for my own use. Like I was spending hours scouring the internet for like a very specific battle map, right? And I was like, you know what? I'm spending like 3 hours looking for a map. Why don't I just try to make one? Because I am like an artist. I've been an artist my whole life. Not necessarily in the TTR PG space, but just artist in general. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to try it. And I haven't looked back since. And it's been a great experience meeting, you know, a community of creative people and just kind of collaborating with them. And it's been awesome. So.
Nice. How about you, Zachary?
Yeah, it actually fairly similar. Like before, like pre-COVID, I played a lot of D&D and other RPGs in person. And then once it all just, you know, came crashing down in person, and you know the one group that I had that was, you know, we've been together for a while moved online, I was like, oh no, what do I do? And so first thing I did was research, you know, different platforms to be able to make maps. And I had never done any digital art ever. I've always been traditional. Like I've done like photo editing and video editing and those kind of things. I've done audio editing, but never from a visual standpoint of like creating something. And so it was all completely new to me. And yeah, I just, it's the same thing as Dread there, where I was like, taking forever to find a map. And I'm like, you know what? I'll just make it myself. And so I started, and I think after about like, I don't know, 3-4 months of doing that, I saw it was a D&D YouTuber had put up being like, yeah, looking for cartographers. And, you know, it's one of those things I've always said, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get, right? And so I was like, sure, yeah, look, here's some examples of my maps. And I only just started digitally. And he was like, sure, you know, that looks fine. Let's do it. And then I started doing that a little bit. And then after a while, realizing that, you know, it'd probably be worth my time more to kind of do things on my own. After I you know, started getting used to the system and the skills and building that up from a traditional standpoint into a digital standpoint, and then starting like, you know, try to build a community after that, you know. So it was a lot of taking my traditional background, trying to put a digital for the first time ever, and then thinking, oh, sure, look, you know, I'm gonna make some money from it too.
Nice. So do you think your having a background in art has definitely helped with the transition to this, to the digital? I mean, Dread, were you a digital artist before this, or were you more traditional like Zachary?
So yeah, I've always dabbled on, like, you know, web design in the 90s. I was like in my teens at the time, and then that came crashing down, the whole like web bubble or whatever it's called. Yeah. And but I've always had that skill set, and I was always interested in digital art. And yeah, it's definitely helped having an art background, right? Because you kind of understand perspective and lighting. And you know, when I was younger, I sketched and drew a lot, you know, just pencil, paper, that sort of medium. So yeah, it's a weird transition, I think, from that to digital, but the concepts don't change. You know, and it's helpful to know kind of like the roles loosely of like how things are supposed to look in a sort of space that you're creating. And part of my brand is I try to bring like a lot of atmosphere and vibe into each map. So I think that's definitely helped with the background that I have. So
nice.
Yeah, like my approach definitely has been, I've always done a lot of watercolor and a lot of like acrylic painting and some oil painting and stuff. And I've, and then in my photography and film background, the level of detail that I would want, right? Like I'm always paying attention to lighting and the way the composition and where things are and all that kind of stuff. And so when I do my maps, it's very like meticulous in the sense of like, I want the flooring to look real. I want the shadowing. If there's a bottle on a table, I want half of that bottle to be in shadow and half of it not. And I spent far too long.
Yes, you can go down that rabbit hole, huh? Right.
Yeah. I remember I had a friend of mine at the very beginning when I was making the maps digitally, and he was like, at what point, you know, is it not worth it? You know, and so it, you know, there's always that, like, the voice in the back of my head being like, how far is too far? But I think for me, like, I think, like one really cool thing about, like, Dredd's map that I love is, like you said, the vibe and the atmosphere. It's very bold and evocative. And mine, it's a lot more, it's not as bold and evocative, but it's a lot more kind of, like, as kind of more realistic, I guess. You know, things are a bit smoother. And I like that we can use the same program and get very different vibes out of it. And both of us spend, you know, the same amount of time doing it for two completely different looks, you know?
Yeah. It's funny because when I'm on like Reddit and wherever else I see your maps, I almost instantly know when it's yours. I'm like, I don't even have to look. So you've definitely done a good job at like branding yourself when I can tell whose map it is without looking.
Yeah. I want that smoothness, you know? But the thing is, like, if I'm using a map, it's funny because, like, I like making that. But if I use a map as a DM, I often go for that bold, evocative look. Yeah. So there's a little bit of a...
No, there's a map for every situation, right? And mine is definitely influenced on how I like to play TTRPGs. And I just kind of make maps that I'm like, this would be cool if I were to find this and want to use it. So that's exactly kind of the target I'm trying to aim at every time I create a map.
Yours have just this great pop factor to them, you know. Lovely.
Yeah, thanks.
It's a really good thing to keep in mind if you're making your own map, is like, what would you want? So that's really helpful. Yeah. So I think we've spoken a lot about Incarnate, but for anyone who doesn't know what it is, never heard of it, never used it before, could one of you tell us what all about Incarnate basically and what you can use it for?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I've used Photoshop in the past, and it to me is very similar to Photoshop. As far as, like, if you know Photoshop, you'll be kind of, you know, a few steps ahead going into Incarnate. It has that kind of, you know, like digital art, like, kind of like platform built in. But essentially it's, you know, they have a whole catalog of assets in multiple different styles. And so assets would be things, you know, like tables, chairs, bottles, walls, all kinds of things, right? And so from the base level, you can just place them on a map. You can arrange them so it looks nice. But then you can also then start building up new things, right? Stacking them and moving them around. You can make things look broken or whatever you want. So there's a whole array of assets that you can use, and they're always adding new ones.
Yeah.
And then you have on top of that, you can go down the rabbit hole of, you know, the flooring can be blended and like almost like, you know, like brush with like a brush feature and stuff. And then lighting can be added and all kinds of stuff. So it's a way to, like, you know, layer by layer, add in a whole bunch of assets and a whole bunch of different things that I think, I'm not sure what you think, Jared, but I think from the from a base level of getting into it is quite simple. And then the more you get into it, it gets more complicated.
Yeah, it's probably an infinite rabbit hole. But the initial usage of it is really easy. You're like, oh, I'm going to click this chair and put it here and then like make some walls and that's a room and then put a rug there underneath. And then like you, right? That's as easy as it can be. Or like TD and I do, we get into the lighting and then we get into the vibe and then we get, you know, how crazy can you get with it? I think, you know, I do it out of principle at this point. I'm like, I want my maps to, you know, set themselves apart from, you know, 90% of other map makers. So I that's the level of detail and vibe and all that stuff that I go for. But with that comes like the need to know how to do that and the mastery of the tool, which only comes with usage over time, right? So you should see the first maps, which I still saved because I actually like looking at my very first map. It's really bad, but like, I like I like looking at it being like, wow, I've come so far from the first map. But here's the funny thing is I made that first map for a group that I was playing with and they loved it. So like, it doesn't matter really. At the end of the day, you can use it for your group and they're going to love it anyway. So
I actually, the first map I made was for a YouTube channel, like for their Patreon. And I completely remade it for my own Patreon later. And the difference is night and day, right? It was less, it was maybe a year difference apart in real time. And if you want, I can even send it over to you, Richie, you know, but like it, like, but like it, the difference is night and day between the two. And it's a little bit like shocking to see the difference, but I still use those first maps because they're functional, right? Yeah. I built them with the idea of function and the idea of usability, even though I didn't really know how to use the program. And so, and I think a lot of people who are using Carnet are probably more on that level of like they're using it for the function for the games, and then the more they use it, the more like they get into it.
Yeah,
it's a good early stage, and you can do like battle maps for like a specific area. You can do the big world building fantasy style. You know, if you want to build a you know, your world or your continents, all that kind of stuff. There's different styles. They have new things that are coming down the pipelines, like sci-fi and all that kind of stuff as well, to kind of branch out.
And it's amazing, by the way.
Sci-fi. Sci-fi is so good.
The artists who create these assets for us to use have just, like us, they've gotten better and better with each release, and you can definitely tell the quality is just crazy now.
Yeah,
crazy.
Nice.
So,
And one of the benefits of Incarnus is that it's, you can use it online. And you can sign up for free.
Yeah, it's a free tool, and you get so many assets. Like, they don't give you all the assets if you don't pay for it. And even the pro, you know, the pro version is like super cheap. I don't know how much it is, but it's under, I think, like $20-some a year. So
yeah, there you go.
It's you know, it's really nothing. So, but it's great. If you need a quick map, you can use the free version. If you want to get more into it, you can pay for the professional one. But yeah, it's a web browser tool. You don't need to like download the software or anything. It's just it's ready to go right out of the gate. So
yeah, I think that's probably one of the benefits of it, isn't it? Is it that makes it so accessible. I mean,
yes,
it's really, like you say, it's simple to use. Like, the maps are just broken up into little cells, aren't they? And you just add your assets and stuff like that.
If you're using it for any kind of RPGs, you can have your grids, you can have everything already pre-done in it.
Yeah.
Even like there's been times where if I'm starting a map, I might sketch something out and I'll just take that picture, put it up as a background, and then build on top of it.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, there's a lot of really like good features of it that you can use.
Nice. So do you guys like follow a bit of a process then whenever you make a map?
I'll let you answer that one first.
Yeah, sure.
You're already kind of,
I mean, like a little bit, like usually what I would do, it's the same process really for if I do traditional art. Like if something's going to be a little bit more complicated or I'm not really sure in my head, I'll just do a few sketches on paper. And then what I do then is go into the program and block it out, you know? So I'll just take the grid, make, you know, just general, like no details, just colors, right? This is gonna be room here, room there, blah, blah, blah. I just block it out. And then I start building on top of it and building on top of it, just like as if I was doing like a watercolor painting, right? Adding more and more on top as I go. And yeah, so I just start like very, very basic squares, circles, that kind of thing. And then as I do that, because I'm so used to kind of building from that kind of foundation, my mind, I can start to see where it's going. And once I get that picture in my head, it's, you're running all cylinders, right? But sometimes, and there are times where, like, if I'm like just really unsure how I want something to look, I'll just sketch it out on paper and then upload it, and then I have that background already done. But yeah, like, it just depends on what I'm doing. But yeah, just start simple, build, and then eventually you get to a point where it kind of starts doing itself in my own head.
Nice. What about you, Dredd?
So yeah, I'm quite a little bit opposite of that. I let the pen just go where it wants. I do have a core idea up here in my mind, and this is like 90% of the time, and I'll tell you when it's not. But when it's just an idea that I have, I kind of picture it in my head, and not to give too much of the secret sauce away, but I always try to put something that is the most important aspect where your eye will naturally fall, right? So for my last map, it's called Cold Fire Mountain. I have this really cool like skull with the horns, and that's like central to the piece, and your eye just immediately is drawn there, even though it's like a very tall, long map this way. But I usually kind of start with the most important thing and kind of just let my creativity go where it wants. And that's like 90% of the time. The other 10% is when someone comes to me and says, I drew this really crappy thing and I want a map for it. And then that's when I upload it and I kind of use that as a template. A really good example of that, I did a map pack for John from Tale of the Manticore, if you ever heard of that. I love that show, by the way. It's a podcast, a dark fantasy podcast, and he has voice actors and things. And there was this one episode that was really evocative when you were listening to it. And the premise was the rogue of this podcast had to sneak into this, not castle, but like a compound. And she was sent to assassinate the lord who lived there, right? And as she's sneaking through the whole the premises, he's describing like the hallways and the rooms. And I'm like, oh man, I'm going to make that map. So I actually reached out to him and I was like, I really want to make this map. And he's like, here's a simple sketch I did. I'm like, thank you. And, you know, I just went from there. So
nice.
Yeah. Most of the time though, it's just the pen hitting the paper and, you know, doing what it wants with like a very vague idea in mind. So it's really cool to see though, that, we can both execute that
very differently,
really yeah. well, though, too.
Yeah, yeah,
both angles. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I think the program itself lends to the versatility of it, but I think it also shows that, like, you know, the map making itself is an artistic process, and everybody does it differently. You know, like I've always been in anything that I do, I'm a planner, right? I need to like block it out and plan it and do everything else. And so, like, even if I'm doing traditional art, I'm going to do some sketches and then I'll take a light box and then, you know, put it onto another sheet of paper and then go again. And I'll have multiple layers of paper, you know, basically going through. And then in the end, I then transfer it with the light box onto watercolor paper, you know, like it's, I'm so like, everything is so meticulously planned out. And that's just my style. It's how I've always been.
And you know? And not to say that mine, you know, I sometimes box myself in because I don't plan enough. Like, oh man, I'm out of space over here. I have to change my idea. But so
there's no right or wrong.
Huh?
There's no right or wrong, you know.
Right, right. It's just different. So I think it also comes from the fact that I'm a musician. I play the drums, and I'm currently, and I have been for like 20 years, in several bands. And the band I'm in now is kind of exploratory in the rock space. It kind of is reminiscent of like classic Santana or something like that, where we kind of just explore soundscapes and create our songs very naturally that way without a plan, really. And we record everything, listen back to it, and then take the best pieces, and then that becomes the song. That's kind of how I approach map making too. I just kind of let the energy kind of flow. Yeah. You know,
it's a bit of a tangent. Is Santana now classic in the terms of like age? Or are you just being like by iconic? Because
if Santana, it's by age, like now,
I feel really old. Like,
well, Santana, I make that delineation because Santana now is nothing compared to like what he used to be in like the olden days, where he was in Woodstock doing the real rock music and not I forget like the more pop Latin kind of things now. So
I have memories of me as a teenager going to buy CDs of Santana.
Yeah, I mean
Santana, Metallica in one trip. You know, like it was.
It's funny. My wife this past Christmas bought me a record player, so I never had one. So I've been like re-experiencing all this like, discovery of older music again, and it's really cool. So
nice. So we mentioned a few times there, in particular, battle maps. So this is a phrase that people might not have heard of before. So Someone, Dreads, do you want to explain what a battle map is and what are the
Yeah.
benefits of having one? Because I map out all my battles because they are crazy scenes. God knows what the hell's going on. You've got to try and have an idea of where people are, what's going on, what's going to happen
Yes,
next.
exactly.
So,
So,
can you tell us all about it?
yeah, the difference between a fantasy map and a battle map usually is that it's tactical in a sense where like everyone can see the usable space, and oftentimes you're moving your characters in such a way to either avoid detection or fight something or accomplish a goal in mind. And it's usually more zoomed in, right, than a classic like world map, right? So you can see like there's walls here and hallways here, and as you're exploring the space with your characters, usually through rounds or however you delineate time, the enemies or the people that aren't you are kind of also moving around the map, and it allows everyone to envision in their minds the same space, right? And there's also a negative to that, right? Because when you do theater of the mind, which is a process where everyone just imagines the space, it sometimes takes away from creative options, because if players don't see it on a visual map, they're not going to ask about it. So you kind of have to, as a dungeon master, you kind of have to help them not kind of limit their creative options, even though they're looking at an image, right? Like, oh, like top-down maps, for example, might not show a chandelier all the time, but it might be there. So like the players can still ask, is there a chandelier in this grand hall room? Because who doesn't want to swing on a chandelier or do something crazy with it, right? So it's kind of things like that that help in a tactical sense when you're moving through the imaginary space, because it's represented, and players use VTTs, which is virtual tabletops, like Foundry or Roll20 or Owlbear or any number of them. There's a million of them now, but it helps everyone, kind of agree on what is happening at any given moment when you have a visual representation. So I don't know if that explains it, but thought I tried.
The only thing I would add to that as well is for accessibility. I know, like with my group, right? Like multiple members, ADHD and those kind of things, and it helps keep attention, right? And
Yeah.
and also some people are more visual and some people aren't. So for those people who need something visual to be able to understand what's happening or follow what's happening or even just keep attention, that's also
Yeah.
really good. And so like yeah it's really good for the accessibility side as well. And
Nice. That's
also just the lovely side, like I was DMing at a gaming convention there in Dublin a few weeks ago. That's why I still have the sniffle. And I actually printed off one of my maps, and I got to like roll it out on the table,
nice.
and there was the ooh
It's
factor.
always
And
a
like
yeah,
yeah,
pretty cool.
and then all of a sudden, like people were there at the convention world, like, "Ooh, what's that?" Like coming
Everyone
over
wants
and
a
having a
battle
look.
map, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, there's also like that side as well. But like I but like some battle maps like ours, really detailed, right down to like the shadowing on a bottle or a chair placed a certain way or those kind of things. But also a battle map could just be a blank sheet of a grid with a quick sketch. It just to get that like that mental picture of it, and so it's really good for that side.
Yeah,
That's
and
that's cool.
full disclosure, before COVID, I would meet up with my group. I would take some terrain pieces and things, but it was 90% of rolling out a dry erase board grid and being like, and this is the cave, and drawing it with a dry erase marker. So
I have mine's on the other
yeah.
side of the desk there,
But like it's portable, like you could draw anything on it, it erases easy. Like it was great for a meeting in person and doing that, while also having some terrain pieces like boxes and little treasure chests and all kinds of things like that, just to help. But
Nice.
yeah, so really, I guess is what we're saying is you can play TTRPGs in any really way you want. You can play it all in your mind. You can have a dry erase board, or you can have a crazy detailed battle map that everyone says, ooh, when he unrolls it. So, like, yeah.
And from a writer's perspective as well, I know, I want to say it was Jim Butcher who does the Dresden Files series. Yeah. He's a big, so good, right? He's a big LARPer. Right. And that's what from my understanding from like listening to him, that's where like his RPG system kind of came from, his LARPing and everything else. And I know there's been a lot of talk about like, you know, the main character in there kind of leveling up throughout the books. And 100%. Yeah. And like, and there's been like kind of like talks in his like Q&As of him, you know, alluding to like, you know, almost like RPG, like, you know, character sheet-esque leveling up. But then also I imagine with him, because he's so big in the RPG scene, he LARPs a lot. When you listen to the descriptions of how things go, it's so close to like something you would see on like a battle map and something you would see in maps and stuff. There has to be a connection there, right? Like,
yeah. I would love to like either have him sit in or like run a game, like just be amazing, right? And also have James Marsters narrate.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I don't know if...
Those audiobooks are just... Mm, yeah.
I read the first one, and then I switch over to audio, and I never looked back because James Marsters is, like, crazy good. And made that book really pop, you know?
I listen to them first, and then I read them because... Like, Spike from Buffy. Like, how would you not want him to tell you the secret of the world? But I know like he's talked about like as a writer, RPGs and stuff like that has helped him. His LARPing has helped him understand how people move, how people fight, how people do things, when he plays role playing games, the encounters that they have in the role playing games help him as a writer.
Yeah.
And you know, all those things would go together. So yeah, like there's definitely like good positives from a map perspective for even writers. And then we have people in a weekly kind of like a group that we have through Incarnate that are writers that come in and what they're making is stuff for their books. They're making battle maps so they can visualize things. They're making the fantasy world maps for their books and stuff like that. So we actually have writers that show up, most weeks that are. They're not cartographers. They're not, you know, trying to do things. Some of them have never even played D&D or any RPGs. They're in Incarnate because they're a writer and it helps them write.
Yeah. So. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So we've covered a few different types of maps. Is there, when you're thinking about the design of the map, is there anything that you think is essential that anyone at home who's thinking about making a map that they should be putting in? So like, for example, a world map, you would expect some kinds of like rivers and mountains just because that's like the foundation of life. But it depends what you kind of world you're making, isn't it? If you're making like a desert world or whatever. So what kind of things would you think about first?
I think if it's a world map, one of the basic things is think about general geography. Right? Water has to come from somewhere, right? A river has to come from somewhere. It's going to come down. And so thinking of that side of things is really important. I think even from a fantasy map standpoint, look at real life, right? Like go on Google Maps, go into, and look around at places that would be similar and then get an idea from there. I lived in New Zealand for several years, and New Zealand has pretty much every biome, and you can pretty much scroll through New Zealand and find any inspiration you want for a world map. I would think, if you're looking at world maps, start with real life and then add the exceptions to the rule then afterwards. And then for battle maps, when I make battle maps, I think of both player and DM. I want things for the DM to be able to have fun toys, fun areas, fun things to use. Also, I want things for the players to be able to use, and then have options within it that there can be more stuff. Like you were saying, Dread, if you can think about it, it can show up, you know? So have things that lead to that as well when you're making the map. And so, I think of like, what would players like? What would DMs like using elevation, all that kind of stuff? Definitely. So some of the things that I think about. How about you?
Yeah, so I can't really speak for world maps because I hardly ever create them, but from a battle map perspective, if it's outside and not inside a building, I'm always doing elevation changes, weird crevices, where, you know, places where the PCs would love to like sneak or hide or like get an advantage of some kind, or, you know, a disadvantage if that's the kind of map you're running. And like, for example, they have to go through a narrow pass and there's an ambush or whatever. So I can always tell, you know, beginning incarnate users, because that's what is usually lacking. You know, they have the foundations, they got the trees and the path and like the path through the woods, but it's missing elevation. And even lighting can play a role when you create a map like that. If it's inside, I like to put little secret nooks and, you know, hidden passageways and weird things in there to like evoke, you know, an imagination, kind of like, oh, like what's this all about? And even it lends itself to the like the possible lore of a place. There's a very fine line though, and I've learned this since I've started till now, where I don't want to force an idea on to whoever is using a map. I want to be suggestive, sometimes strongly, but not box them in into a very specific use case that I had in my head. I want to suggest things and but still allow for it to be not that.
Options.
Yeah, and it's a very it's taken me a while to understand that, and I think that maybe just comes over time with when we gain mastery over the tool, that it kind of lends itself to that. So
yeah, there's a I don't want to mess it up, I think it's Jaquez five, is it, I think it's about like Jaquezing the dungeon. There's a writer whose last name is Jaquez, and the idea is that you have like a 5-room dungeon and everything should kind of like loop back in different ways, and you have multiple points of entry. The idea is that, you know, like you can have your center points, you have the moments where everything's funneled in, or, you know, your options are limited, but to get around the map, to go in and out, and even the interpoint into the map, there's options. And those might change as you play, you know, but right, when you build a map, you build in those options.
Nice.
So like,
nice. Yeah. Oh, it's been a really fantastic discussion so far. I've got one more question for you both. What advice would you give anyone out there who is thinking about making a map for the first time? Dredd, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I'll take this one. I don't think there's really any rules, to be honest. It really depends on what you're going to use it for or what you want other people to use it for. I have my own things that I follow because that's my ethos and what I believe a good battle map should be. But there's nothing wrong with just a regular old like tavern battle map. You know, there's nothing special about it. It's just a tavern. Who doesn't like a good tavern though? Like that's one of the essential core pieces of fantasy, is like the party meets at a tavern. Like,
yeah,
that's often like session one. It's often what happens after a long like battle sequence or a long travel sequence. You come to a tavern. So really, I like putting very evocative like points of interest on my battle map that draw the eye, but like you don't have to do that. So I just think follow your creative instincts, follow your heart, and the more you use the tool, like the more you practice art, the better you become at it. So I don't really have any rules for anyone other than what I've already said. If you're making an outdoor map, try to put elevation in it, makes it more interesting. If you want to get more advanced with the tool, adding shadows and, you know, other things like that really help set the mood and evoke a certain vibe. But yeah, it's kind of open, and just like art, you know, there's no real right or wrong way to do it. It's just kind of what you believe in your ethos when you create. So
nice.
Yeah, like I think for me, I would say If you're thinking about starting and you don't know how to do it, just do it, right? Just sit down, do something for the first time. I've always said the only bad art is the art you don't make. And, you know, practice makes progress, right? I don't think there's ever anything perfect, right? I think the more you practice something, the better you get. And so make something that you like, make something for you, even if it's for somebody else, right? If it's for a game or something else, make something that you like. Because if you like what you're making, then the end product's going to be better. And don't, if it's the first time doing it, don't expect perfection because no one's perfect, you know, because the next time you make it, you have more knowledge, you'll be better. Next time you make it, it'll be better. And you learn every time. So
that's fantastic advice.
Yeah, and just full disclosure, there's still mistakes and things that I don't like in every map. It's just like,
oh yeah, yeah,
they,
yeah.
The blast radius of those things have shrunken, right? But they're still there, and I'm like, man. But sometimes you just have to do the attrition game and be like, you know, I'm gonna just move on, because to fix that at this point is way more work than it's worth, and no one's gonna notice but me. So
yeah, that's the true master in you there.
what to say? You want it you want it done, not perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go on, Jed.
Oh, I was just gonna say I've actually had to relearn that lesson for writing, because I'm trying to get into like the writing aspect of the genre now, where I'm creating like one shots and adventures and things like that. And
nice.
I've been sitting on this one for like a year, and I'm just like, you know what? I need to just get it out there now and just let it fall where it, you know, let it land where it lies, and move on, because just like with maps, you know, it's not going to be perfect, but someone's going to find enjoyment out of it, and I'll eventually learn that lesson and move on and try it again and again and again. So
definitely, yeah. Got to try these things. That's the biggest, the hardest part is finishing them and getting them out there.
Yes.
And who knows what happens then after that. It's worked out well for you guys anyway with the maps. So if anyone wants to check out your work and to speak to you about maybe using your brilliant services for their own maps, I think I'm going to require as well myself when it comes to getting me novella out there. So
go.
Where's the best place to look for to learn a bit more about both of you?
For me, Instagram and Patreon are the main two. I have my stuff on Reddit and stuff like that and all the other places, but Tendle Doodle for Instagram, and TD Maps, so Tendle Doodle Maps for Patreon. I'm doing like a 5-month project. I'm writing a big adventure, right? Nice. And doing a community-based style and having votes and those kind of things, and I'm doing my writing at the moment, and it's the big giant castle that I'm making for someone else's Kickstarter book. I can also use it at the same time, so I'm changing it up for myself and making my own adventure out of it, NPCs and stuff like that, and I'm commissioning some people to make art for it, and it's all going to be done as a community, and by the end it'll be a big adventure with a big massive castle. And then I'll have a product out of it, and people can use it, and people can have fun with it. And then I'll also, speaking of what you were saying there, Dread, I have two different zines that I'm in the process of finishing for two different taverns, actually. They have the
awesome.
Occult. Yeah. You have the one that's nearly done is the Occult Cup, and it's all like, you know, kitschy occulty stuff, and it's really quirky and funny, and it's based on a game of mine that I run that I've been running for like, you know, a year and a half, and nice. So all the NPCs, all the art's done, everything's done, I'm in the layout stage now, and so, you know, both physical and digital products, those will be available, and hopefully by the end of the year I'll be doing conventions as well with physical products and digital products. So yeah,
nice.
TD Maps for Patreon and Tyndall Doodle for Instagram.
Awesome. And Dread.
Yeah. So you can find me on Patreon, Dread Maps. Linktree has all my links of all kinds on there. I'm on Roll20, itch.io, Drive Through, pretty much anywhere where you can put a map. But
I'm also on those. I always forget about those.
So I just try to be where the people are, right? And but you can support me best on Patreon, I think. I would really love to have you. I'm always working on something new. I take suggestions from my patrons who joined the Discord that I have, and like TD was saying, I'm constantly working with other creators because I feel like that's where the real power is. Shout out to my buddy at Grimwood. He's making his own TTRPG, and I'm kind of doing a little work for him. House DM has his own YouTube channel, and he kind of does scenario work, and he's also making his own adventures and things, and I'm helping out with that. I've also worked with Scotty from Easy D6 and Hank from Runehammer. All great dudes, and I just want to meet you if you're also a creative person and doing this in this space, and I'd be glad to help out. So that's probably the takeaway here is, and I didn't realize this at first, right? Is just, I've enjoyed the most just working with other people and helping create something more than I can on my own.
For sure.
Yeah. I know. That's why I love doing this podcast, because I get to connect with guys like you and get to spread the word to other people. It's brilliant. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you very much. It's been a brilliant conversation. I've learned so much.
Thank
Can't wait to get stuck into Incarnus again. And
if you have any questions, reach out.
Yes. Links for everything for Dread and Zach's profiles will be in the description. Thank you very much for listening at home. And thank you again, Dread and Zach.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.